Today, on The Exam Room.
A lot of us still don't know what the difference between the two actually is. So what is the difference between the pre and the probiotic?
Well, we're going to have to learn these things because they're arriving into our supermarket. And as you walk around the store, you're going to see these words, these labels. You're going to see postbiotics too in the future. It's just starting now. Probiotics are by far the most mature, meaning that it's been in your market now for probably close to 10 years. And prebiotics are sort of a post-pandemic thing. This is going mainstream. And so you need to understand the differences between these.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I'm the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world. Hi to the Exam Roomies listening in Irvine, California, Carrollton, Texas, and Jalapa, Mexico. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 91 of season 7, number 590 overall. Prebiotics? Probiotics. What is the difference? We're getting the lowdown today with Dr. B, the Gut Health MD. How do they each work to improve your health? And what are the best sources? We're talking supplements and natural foods. Both are on the docket. Fermented foods, fruits, vegetables. Which are the best bets? And how can they all work together to take your health to the next level? We're going to delve into it. Plus, we have a big announcement about a live show that Dr. Bolsiewicz and I are doing together in Miami. Big time stuff coming to South Florida. But there is nothing bigger and more important than your health. So let's get into it with a probiotic professional. He is the only guy more famous in South Carolina than Hootie. He also wants to help you go duty. So let's wash up and hold his hand because he only wants to be with you for the next half hour or so. A man of means by all means, king of the throne. He is the one and only Dr. Will Bolsiewicz on the Exam Room Live. Welcome back to the show, Dr. B.
Oh my goodness, Chuck. I don't know how you do it. Because you keep, every time I'm just like, he can't do better next time. There's no way he does better next time. And somehow you do. Like, at what point are we going to reach the peak, Chuck? Is there still more? Do you got more gas in the tank?
There is no ceiling, sir. There is no ceiling.
You're
all
incredible.
I can tell you is we're just getting started.
I think we've unlocked, like, you know, you have the radio voice, you have the personality, you have all the features, but I think we've unlocked something new and special at this point in your life.
I'm excited about this. I feel like it's a challenge, and I do like trying to clear that bar every month. So you got to let me know, like, if I ever come up a little bit short, don't worry. I'll double down the next month. It's amazing, but I have so much fun. I remember texting you yesterday, like a meme, you know, of Chris Pratt on The Office. I was like, I got your intro for tomorrow. You know, I was like, game on. So
I mean, yeah. I always know you're gonna have something up your sleeve. I always know you are. It's just that when it actually happens, I'm like, dang, man, he really is doing it again. Like, this guy is smashing it. Unbelievable.
Thank you. Thank you. And if the intro made you laugh, be sure to give this video a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel here on YouTube. You're a good man. And also, all right, on a more serious front, if you have a question for Dr. B, go ahead, drop it in the doctor's mailbag. Do that by posting your question in the comments or in the chat. We're going to get to as many as we can here when we open up the mailbag in just a little bit. But the topic du jour comes to us. Actually, it was an epiphany I had after reading one of your latest newsletters where you went into detail about prebiotics and probiotics. I feel like we've talked a lot about those both on the show already, but a lot of us still don't know what the difference between the two actually is. So what is the difference between the pre and the probiotic?
Yeah, well, we're going to have to learn these things because they're arriving into our supermarket. And as you walk around the store, you're going to see these words, these labels. You're going to see postbiotics too in the future. It's just starting now. Probiotics are by far the most mature, meaning that it's been in your market now for probably close to 10 years. And prebiotics are sort of a post-pandemic thing. That, I mean, I would like to believe that I at least played some role in bringing that term into your supermarket in the sense that this is going mainstream. And so you need to understand the differences between these. And Chuck, I'll start with a high level. And then if you like, we can drill down and dive deeper based upon what the community that's with us here today wants and based upon what the questions that you have. So, but I think that like the basics of it are this, that probiotics are living microorganisms. Okay. They're alive. And this includes bacteria and yeast. But in order to qualify as a probiotic, it's really important that it's not just a living microorganism. You can't just make that claim on anything. It has to be something that actually has demonstrated to have a proven benefit for human health. And this is more than just, hey, this microbe is good. It also, truly, if we want to be specific about this, which we should be, then it should be the proper microbe in the proper amount for that outcome of improving human health. So the proper microbe in the proper amount. Prebiotics are a bit different. Prebiotics are food for these microorganisms. But what makes them special and allows us to use the term prebiotic is that there's basically going to be two things that result from prebiotics. Number one, they are processed by our microbes, and there is a change in the microbes that results from prebiotics. So you know, whenever you consume this prebiotic, it's going to institute a change within the microbes. But number two, there's a benefit to human health. So the result of both prebiotics and probiotics is they have to be good for us. They have to be good for humans. But in both cases, it involves either living microorganisms that you are introducing into your body, or alternatively, the food for living microorganisms, which you are going to bring in, and you have the bacteria and the yeast living inside you, so you can feed them. And when you feed them, they grow stronger, and then they reward you. So this is the way that these two things work.
All right. Now, we talk in terms of nutrients, how a lot of us are also coming up short. Are a lot of us missing one or the other in terms of pre and probiotics from our diet as well? Is that another victim of the standard American diet?
This is a victim of the cultural shifts that have taken place during the course of the last 100 years, most pervasive in the Western world, specifically within the United States, but also true in many other places as they adopt an Americanized diet. So, that's absolutely the truth, Chuck. And, you know, I would love to believe that exam roomies are functioning at a higher level because of the conversation that they're tuning into right now, where, you know, we talk about this every month, the importance of fiber, the importance of resistant starch, the importance of polyphenols. By the way, everything that I just mentioned, fiber, resistant starch, and polyphenols, there's a few things that they share in common. Number one, they're all prebiotic. Number two, they come from plants. So I would love to believe that the exam roomies are focusing on more plants in their diet. And when you quite simply do that, if you just add more plants to your diet, you're going to get more prebiotics into your diet. And that's a beautiful thing. But on the flip side, I think where there's an opportunity for many exam roomies and for Americans in general is with the probiotics. Probiotics are living microorganisms. And so now the issue is that if you take the things that exist in your supermarket, all right, including the plant-based things that sit on the shelf for 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, and they don't change, they're as fresh as the day that they were manufactured, which was back in 2022, okay? The reason why they don't change, the reason why they never go stale or form mold or go rotten is because they are designed to kill microbes. Microbes are a part of the life cycle of our food, and that includes when the food decays. And decay is not a bad thing, because decay is putting it back into the soil so those nutrients can be recycled and turned back into fresh food. But the food in our supermarket, it never breaks down, it never decays. It's perpetually the same. And the reason why is because it has things like preservatives. Preservatives, to me, is effectively a word for saying antimicrobial or antibiotic. So, and this is the issue. These are sterile foods, Chuck. We need to bring back food that's no longer sterile, And that could be raw food. Chuck, there was a recent study that came out that showed that the microbes that exist in raw plant-based foods actually show up in our microbiome. And of course, it can be fermented food. And we end up talking about fermented food every single month. I'm on the show, Chuck.
Have to, bro.
I'll let you go.
Oh, yeah. So I guess like you're kind of hinting at this. I think when you're talking about something that's been shelf stable for a very long time, then I start to wonder, well, what about the frozen produce, the frozen spinach, the frozen kale, the frozen berries, things like that? No preservatives, but definitely not picked yesterday either. Is there going to be a change there?
There is. I mean, it's not exactly the same as buying raw food. And by the way, though, I'm not sitting here and arguing that we should eat a raw-only diet. So please don't misinterpret what I'm saying as that. In fact, I love frozen berries, frozen fruit, frozen vegetables. But let's take a quick moment and let's look at the way that it's produced. Okay, it's going to be harvested at the peak of freshness and nutrient density. And then typically what they'll do is they'll throw it into water and they'll just boil it for a brief period of time, not necessarily to the point of cooking it, but boiling it for a period of time effectively to sterilize it. And that's what they're attempting to accomplish with that. And then they will freeze it, boom, like that. So now it's being locked in. The reason why they did that specific sequence is conceptually very similar to what you would do if you were canning. If you were canning something, you have to heat it up to a point to basically make it so that it doesn't have any microbes before you actually put it into the can and lock it in. So our frozen fruit, frozen vegetables, it's not going to have the microbiome that you would find on the same plant that's raw, but it still has the prebiotics. It still is beneficial to you for all of the wonderful things that we get from plant-based foods that include phytonutrients, vitamins, minerals, etc.
Right, because I can just see somebody saying, well, what's the difference between that and cheese doodles? So thank you for making that point, man. That's good stuff right there. Before we get into supplements and things, because I know that that's something huge. I think that if you take the average person and you're like, man, you know, just the way that we're eating, they could probably use a little bit of help. I don't think in this case, a supplement is necessarily like a bad thing. But let's talk about foods first, and then we'll get into it. So obviously, we already mentioned fermented food, kimchi, your number one seed, sauerkraut. What are some other foods that we might want to turn to for prebiotics, my man?
Well, prebiotics, I guess let me start with this. And I kind of said this, but I wanted to be totally clear with it. That to me, there's when I think of prebiotics, there's three main types of prebiotics that I'm thinking about. These are the main classes of prebiotics, right? And that is fiber, resistant starch, and polyphenols. Now, fiber and resistant starch, you can kind of bundle together. They're very similar to one another. They're not exactly the same, but they actually, from a functional perspective, they behave pretty much the same, which is that they are undigested, they work their way through your intestine, arrive into the colon intact, and then prebiotic fiber and resistant starch is consumed by your gut microbes, they grow stronger, and in that process, they transform the fiber and the resistant starch. It stops being these things, it's no longer this. And it turns into short-chain fatty acids like butyrate, acetate, and propionate. So if we want butyrate, acetate, and propionate, we need to feed the microbes the ingredients that they need in order to produce them, right? And those ingredients are fiber and resistant starch. And this is where, you know, we're falling short as a society where 95% of Americans are deficient in fiber. And in the Western world, the average person is consuming about 4 grams of resistant starch per day. And I would argue they should probably be getting more like 16. So they're only about 25% of the way there. All right. Now, polyphenols, real quick, Chuck, are different. They're not the same as the first two. Polyphenols are responsible for the colors in our food. So when we talk about, you know, eat the rainbow, basically that's another way of saying eat as many different types of polyphenols as possible. The polyphenols themselves do not turn into short-chain fatty acids. But what happens is that 95% of polyphenols do not get absorbed until they come into contact with your gut microbes. And then when they do, they will cause a shift in the gut microbiome the polyphenol gets activated, gets absorbed into your body, provides health benefits. An example of this is resveratrol, right, which we find in red grapes, red wine. But also in the microbiome, you have a shift that takes place in the microbes, where now they're actually set up to produce more short-chain fatty acids. So in other words, there is a synergistic effect that takes place, Chuck, where when you combine fibrin-resistant starch with polyphenols, you get even more production of short-chain fatty acids than you would get if it was just fibrin-resistant starch. So this is why we want all of these different things. So bottom line, Chuck, the rule is simple. Here's the takeaway. And this is what I wrote about in my first book, Eat the Rainbow, right? Diversity of plants. When we eat a wide variety of different plants, every single plant has fiber. Every single plant has polyphenols. Many plants have resistant starches. And so when we eat a wide variety, we automatically fulfill this.
Ooh, school is in session today, my friends. Class is in session. Man, that was some next level nutrition nerd out right there. Well played, sir. Well played. I like that. All right, so we got the pre's. Let's talk about the pros here. I assume that the list for probiotics is like CVS receipt length long. This is going to be a long one, correct?
Well, so probiotics, are we going to talk about food? Can you mind me talking about food with probiotics?
Oh, absolutely. I want to talk about food. That's what I'm asking you, man. Bring on the it's time to eat. Feed me.
Well, so first of all, raw food that you can look at it and be like, oh, that grew in the soil. Guess what? It has a microbiome. And the evidence indicates that the microbiome of the plant will be transferred to you on some level, that there is a part of your microbiome that results from the food that you're eating that's raw food and has a living microbes as a part of it. But then the second part is fermented food. So fermented food has live microorganisms, including both bacteria and yeasts. In many cases, the microorganisms in fermented food are the same that you would buy in a capsule of probiotics. Now, this is not to equate the two as being the same. I'm not trying to do that. What I'm telling you, though, is if your goal is to acquire these beneficial microbes, you have choices, because fermented foods will in many cases contain them. An example of this is Lactobacillus plantarum, which is in sauerkraut, as well as you can buy it in a capsule. Now, with fermented foods, we have many choices, Chuck, but they have to be real fermented food that has live microorganisms. So you mentioned kimchi, you know I love sauerkraut, but it also could be things like kombucha, water kefir. You know, something that I've been doing recently, I'll just throw this out there, is I have a bottle of apple cider vinegar with the mother. With the mother means that it contains these live microorganisms. So apple cider vinegar is a fermented food. And when I have my Spindrift once a day, I will get my Spindrift and I'll throw in a splash of the apple cider vinegar in there, not so much to make it tart or acidic, just enough to add a little zing of flavor. But at the same time, I am also adding some live microorganisms to my beverage.
That actually sounds really good, man. That little bit of a zing there, that sounds really good. Did you just think that up, or did you like get that from our friend Carly Bodrug or something like that?
No, okay, well, let me come clean and just tell the story real quick.
Yeah.
I got into Costco.
Who doesn't?
Are you
like
a Costco guy, Chuck?
I'm a big Costco guy. Absolutely.
Yes. All right, my kind of guy. I knew it.
Yeah.
So part of it for me is that, let me just keep it real, that gosh, these prices. I mean, I have four kids, right? So I'm feeding six. So when the prices go up by, you know, 30% in the supermarket, which it feels like that's where we're at, I feel that. And our family feels that. So in some ways, this can be a good thing because it forces you to find efficiencies. And one of the efficiencies is Costco. So I started going there, and I of course got a 3-pack of apple cider vinegar. And I was like, what am I going to use this apple cider vinegar for? And I was like, you know what? I got this 30-pack of Spindrift here. I got this 3-pack of apple cider vinegar. Let me put the two together. It just makes sense.
Well played. Yeah. Thank you. A little zing. Just enough. Like that sounds zing. Really refreshing.
It's refreshing. All honesty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not so much that it puts hair on my chest. I don't need any more of that. I have plenty.
All right. On that note, if you have a question for Dr. B, there's a lot that are already in the mailbag, but there's always room for more, baby. We're like Jell-O. So keep on stuffing it with all of your questions. Next up, by and large, is it more effective for somebody to get these pre and probiotics from natural sources like food, or is a supplement more effective?
Well, so I've been consistent with my messaging for, you know, I don't even know how many years, because this is my experience as a gastroenterologist. So I speak to what I've seen thousands of times. To me, it has to start with diet. So I would advocate that I would never advocate for anyone to make their main focus supplements ever. But what I would say is that every single person should start with diet, make an assessment, look for opportunities. Like to me, I'm always tweaking my diet. I'm always, you know, and it's by no means perfect, nor am I trying to make it perfect, but I'm always looking for these sort of new strategies or ways that I can just add a little bit more. So like that apple cider vinegar with my Spindrift is an example of something that I feel like, gosh, this is better than me just drinking a Spindrift, having that little splash of the ACV. So start with that and do the best that you can. But for every single one of us, no matter who you are, you're going to be doing your best. And that's good. And I celebrate that. And that's going to be different for different people. And this is one of the things that, you know, that my platform is about, Chuck, that may not be the same as everyone else, but I'm of the belief that we have to meet people where they are. So for the person who's 5% or 10% plant-based, well, you know what? That person is very much like me in the way that I used to eat. So I certainly have compassion for that person. I want to help them to grow in their love for plant-based food. So I want to meet them where they are. I want to help them to move. But at the same time, there's the acknowledgement that everything that we do with our diet, we can pump that to a higher level with the addition of supplements. And that to me is the role that supplements have. They're also not exactly the same. So a quick example of this, like I would not argue that a supplement that contains plant-based foods is the same as eating the food. It's not. It serves a different purpose. It's more targeted to what you're trying to accomplish, which may be to support the gut microbiome. Now, a big part of my belief in this approach, Chuck, and by the way, I'm speaking right now really to prebiotic supplements, and I can talk more about probiotics too, but the reason that I'm a big believer in prebiotic supplements is because no one will ever be able to change the thousands of patients that I saw with my own eyes who benefited from the use of prebiotic supplements, including the many, many people, I'm not going to claim thousands because the reality is that 1% of America is eating plant-based right now or vegan, but the many, many patients who I also had who came to me because they were eating plant-based, because they were eating a healthy diet, yet they were still suffering with digestive health issues. And the way in which I saw them and their digestive health improve as the result of supplements. So from my perspective, like the way that I would present this is every single person in America should be eating the best diet they can possibly eat. And there's a place that exists where we can enhance our gut health and go beyond that by adding supplements. So this is the way that I approach this.
Yeah, and I know that with your particular supplement, the DMN with 38 Terra, I know that that's something that you really worked hard to bring to market, was something that was nice, clean, plant-based, and as healthy as possible. I see some bags up there on the shelf there too. So what's the feedback been like from the people who have been using that?
Oh my gosh. Feedback has been amazing. You can go to our website, 38terra.com, and check out the reviews. I'm not going to like sit here and read them while we're here on the air, but I am very proud of them. Those are real reviews from real customers who are finding amazing benefits. And, you know, the way that I formulated DMN, the intent was to create the prebiotic that I always wished that I could have for my patients. So it brings together these things of fiber, resistant starch, and polyphenols into one blend that you drink once a day. Tastes great, delicious, super easy to do. But yet, when you do this on a daily basis, it really starts to add up. And, you know, my intent was to create this to improve digestive health issues, to give people better bowel movements, to reduce bloating and gut symptoms. So that was my goal. That's, and like part of the way that I accomplished that is with this being a certified low FODMAP product. But it's interesting, Chuck, because really what DMN is at its core is it's a prebiotic, like a superior prebiotic intending to have a beneficial effect on the microbiome. And when you improve a person's gut microbiome, as has been my platform for many years, when you improve a person's microbiome, health follows. Amazing healing is possible as a result of healing a person's microbiome. So if you go, for example, to our review page, you're going to see people talking about improvements of their psoriasis, improvements of food allergy type symptoms. We had a person who just wrote in who had profound improvement of their brain fog. To me, this is a dream come true, because that was the reason why I made the product in the first place, was to achieve this type of effect and try to help people.
That's amazing. It never ceases to amaze me how much of our overall health is driven from our gut. Like, I mean, you just named symptoms all over the road, and yet they're all connected in one area, and that is our gut. Like, that is fascinating, brother.
Yeah, there's many reasons for this, but if I were to distill that down, Chuck, the reason really to me is above all else that our gut is really a chemical factory where physiology, human physiology begins, because we introduce food into our body and then that food is transformed by our gut microbes, released, these chemicals are released and they have effects throughout the entire body. And that includes the short chain fatty acids that I was mentioning a moment ago, which I can, like, everything, psoriasis, brain fog, like I could go down the line, food allergies, I could go down the line and explain to you why it would be that the short chain fatty acids would be responsible for the improvements that we're seeing. But then the other thing to bear in mind is also that your immune system exists throughout your entire body, and your immune system is deeply connected to your gut and your gut microbes. And so when we build a healthier gut, we actually are building a healthier immune system in the process. And that becomes very relevant when we're talking about things like this that are chronic inflammatory issues, like psoriasis, like Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, like allergies.
Well, so here's a question. You talk about the immune system, that makes me think about, you know, somebody being sick and then naturally maybe somebody is put on a course of antibiotics. I feel like we can't talk about prebiotics, probiotic supplements without also talking about, well, you know, how could something like DMN or loading up on kimchi and fiber really help a person as they're going through that course of antibiotics and then more importantly, getting reset after the fact?
Yeah. So, I mean, antibiotics, I think the way that I approach this, and you and I have done an entire episode on this topic, by the way. So for people who really want to deep dive rather than my 2-minute answer, I would certainly encourage you to go to the Exam Room podcast, type in, you know, Exam Room, antibiotics, Ulcowitz or Dr. B, and you'll find this episode. Anyway, the thing about this, number one, Chuck, antibiotics, when we really need them, they can be life-saving, but research would suggest that 2 out of 3 times we don't actually need them. So every single time they're being prescribed, I think that it's completely fair to ask your doctor or the prescribing person, why am I taking this and what happens if I don't take it? And so they should have an answer. That's not, you're not challenging them and being mean about it, but what you're doing is you're just verifying before you take this antibiotic that in fact your body does need this. That to me is the right place to start. If you are going to take an antibiotic, I want you to be supporting your gut microbiome before, during, and after you're done taking the antibiotic. I want you to be supporting it before, during, and after. And that means the things that we're talking about. That means eating a diversity of plants, eating lots of plant-based foods, having fermented food on board. That also means supporting your gut with, to me, a prebiotic supplement. Because the beauty of the prebiotic supplement is that it doesn't get killed by the antibiotic. The prebiotic supplement's gonna go down and provide the benefit to you. And actually the evidence has indicated to us that when people take antibiotics, when they're already consuming a high fiber diet, which can be enhanced both through diet and supplements, when they're already taking a high fiber diet, there's less damage done and the recovery is much faster. So there's benefits. After the antibiotics are done, then that's where, to me, I want a period in a perfect world of 2, if not 4 weeks, where we're really drilling drilling and doubling down on these concepts. So eating a diversity of plants, having fermented food, possibly having your prebiotic supplement, getting a good night's rest, exercising, spending time outdoors, minimizing sugar and alcohol and saturated fat. So that to me is the quick 2 to 3 minute summary of the way that I approach antibiotic use.
Absolutely. And yeah, as you said, go back and look for that video. If you're listening to this podcast, we'll put a link in the show description and in the episode notes for you. Let's open up the doctor's mailbag, take a question from Cheryl at 1138. Cheryl's wondering, should certain vegetables be cooked for more bioavailability or pre-probiotic benefit? And if so, which ones?
There's some examples that exist. I'm of the belief, Chuck, that this is a great question, Cheryl. Thank you for asking this. I'm of the belief, much as I recommend diversity of plants, I also would advise diversity of cooking techniques, because there was research that was done at the University of California, San Francisco by a scientist named Peter Turnbaugh. And basically what he found is if you take the exact same plant-based food, but you cook it, then the way in which it interacts with your gut microbiome is slightly different. In fact, it may actually be like eating, almost like eating two different plant-based foods. So for example, if I am going to steam some spinach, I'll eat some raw spinach and I'll steam some spinach. I'll do both. There are examples that exist, Cheryl, that have more bioavailability. And it's hard to give universal answers to these questions, but like the first thing that immediately comes to mind are tomatoes, where when we actually cook the tomato, perhaps you've noticed the flavor changes. I actually find roast tomatoes to be even tastier. And what's interesting is you're actually releasing the lycopene. Lycopene is a plant-based nutrient that has beneficial effects. And so this is an example where, like, for example, cooking your food can be to your benefit.
All right, Colleen at 1214, dropping a comment in there. Operating in our safe space. We're all among friends. It's a safe space with open windows. Colleen, after 4.5 years of a whole food plant-based diet, how can I reduce flatulence? It's a huge problem for me. Is it possibly not enough pre or probiotics?
Gosh, that's a great question, Colleen. So something to keep in mind before we jump in, and your question is a very valid question. I want to just start with something a little bit outside of it, which is to say that we're all going to pass gas. Passing gas is normal. And actually, the creation of gas is in a way proof that we are creating short-chain fatty acids. Because when we consume fiber or resistant starch, and then we make short-chain fatty acids from them, that fermentation process by the microbes releases gas, creates flatulence. That being said, when our gut is in rhythm and has grown efficient in its ability to process and digest these foods, you will still pass gas, but it will come very easily. It won't seem to be as much, and it won't cause discomfort in the process of being there. So part of this is making sure that we're in a rhythm. There are many people, and Colleen, I obviously have no clue if this is you. I'm just putting this out there because this is my experience as a gastroenterologist. But there are many people who they don't realize that actually they're a little bit constipated and they're not having those good, efficient evacuations. One of the ways that you would know this is if you discover that after you poop, you're not having that flatulence issue for at least a few hours. And then maybe it starts to build back up again. So for example, sometimes people poop in the morning and they're good until the afternoon. And they're like, I always get afternoon bloating. They probably need another bowel movement later in the day. And so now continuing to consume plant-based foods can be part of this equation, but you may need something else to help to keep their gut into a good rhythm and moving through. Example of something that can be helpful is magnesium. So I like magnesium oxide, magnesium citrate, or magnesium sulfate, which you would take to help to facilitate that regularity of your bowel movements. And this is something that I talk about in my course called Conversations About Constipation.
And yeah, there's a link to your courses over at theplantfedgut.com in the show description right now for everybody as well, if you're interested in partaking. Want to get like a really good education? It's a good place to start. Light year, 1989, 1236. I know how much you like sourdough bread. Does whole wheat sourdough, homemade, count as a fermented food, Dr. B?
I count it as a fermented food. Now, Lightyear, obviously, when we bake the bread, we are killing the microbes. But here's something interesting, Chuck. I mentioned earlier, in the store, you're going to see probiotics, prebiotics, and now you're going to start to see postbiotics. Postbiotic is a broad term. It could refer to things like short-chain fatty acids, but it could also refer to killed microbes. Killed microbes are actually considered to be postbiotics. Actually, we call them zombie or ghost probiotics, Chuck, which is kind of a cool name. And there's new evidence that's emerging that suggests to us that it's not exactly a one-to-one relationship. It's not exactly the same, but if you take probiotics and then you heat kill them, which is effectively what you're doing when you bake the sourdough bread, there's evidence to suggest that the microbes still provide human benefit. And this is why we would call them postbiotic, because they're not probiotic, they're not alive. So we would call them postbiotics. So Lightyear, to answer your question, I still count this as a fermented food. I would still strive to get live microbes in the diet. But I think that there's benefits to sourdough that clearly outpace what you get from non-sourdough bread.
Oh, man. Zombie biotics, man. That's awesome. I feel like we should have talked about that during Halloween season. Here's an interesting one. Speaking of probiotics and fermented foods, from New Life Steve at 1218. I've never heard of this. I bought some frozen kimchi here in Istanbul, Turkey, the other day. I have let it thaw. How long do you think it is safe to keep eating it? I have no idea. Is this anything that's in your wheelhouse? And believe me, it's okay if it's not. I didn't even know frozen kimchi was a thing.
Well, number one, this is proof that we really are being listened to by people from 150 countries around the world. Because
yeah, no cool kidding. Say that, man.
I know you don't. I know you don't. But it's nice to have New Life Steve here hanging out with us from Istanbul. So, you know, it's hard for me to completely say, right? Because each individual food should have a distinct shelf life. I will tell you the way that I would personally approach this, though, because, for example, you might make your own at-home ferment, right? You might make your own kimchi and then have a question 6 months from now, as this thing was sitting in the fridge, is it okay for me to consume this? And the way that I would approach this is to trust your senses. So obviously, if you see any growth on the kimchi, then it's a no-go. If it smells funny, if it looks funny, if there's anything about it, if it's discolored, if any of those things have changed, then to me, it's a no-go. I play it safe. But when it smells attractive, when it smells appealing, when it looks like kimchi, then to me, I think that there's the open opportunity to consume that food. And this is the beauty of fermented foods, is they can have an incredible shelf life.
The lovely and talented Mrs. Carroll, my wife Julie, will be the first to say that the kimchi always smells funky and she wants nothing to do with it. She does not like it when I open up the jar of kimchi in this house, man. It is like grounds for divorce sometimes almost. I'm trying to get her on board the kimchi train, you know, choo-choo, but she's just not having it, man. Not at all.
Well, I think it's an interesting thing that you're pointing out here, because basically fermented foods, if you were to look at fermented foods from across the globe that include kimchi, but also include, you know, sauerkraut in Eastern Europe, or you could go down the line. There's so many different ones, right? Tempeh is an example of one. Many of them are funky. And to an outsider who's not a part of that culture, you stop and you go, ooh, I don't know if I can do that. That's just not me. But the funny thing about it is oftentimes these are the most celebrated foods within that food culture. So there's something about that connection with these microbes and the products of these microbes that's special, where when we're accustomed to eating them, we actually find them more attractive. We actually want more of them. So I think it kind of speaks to the uniqueness of the fermented foods.
All right, let's grab two more really quickly. And then we've got a big announcement, a very big announcement for South Florida. Terrible Lotus first at 1218. Out of curiosity, I have a huge fig tree. One of the things I do with the figs is freeze them. I move them straight from the tree to the freezer pretty much. Does some of the biotic life of them just hibernate? So that eliminates that like flash frozen deal where you boil them first and then you freeze them straight away. This is like fig to freezer.
Yeah, most likely they hibernate. So if you take, so temperature is one of the ways that we can control the growth of microbes. So like, for example, if you were fermenting your food. Let's take sauerkraut as an example, because actually right now, Chuck, depending on where you live, it could be sauerkraut season right now. And when it's cooler temperatures, like in the high 50s and 60s, it's a nice, slow ferment because the microbes are like less active. So, and it gives you time to sort of nail the ferment, get it perfect. Whereas if you were to have warmer temperatures, you try to do sauerkraut in your garage when it's in the 80s, it's going to go too fast. It's going to spin out of control and you're probably going to grow mold, right? This is why we love cooler temperatures, because the microbes slow down and it's more precise and controlled. And if you cool it down even more, which is a refrigerator, then those microbes really start to become inactive. This is why refrigerators work. This is why refrigerators help to preserve our food, because we're basically inactivating the microbes, yet they're still there. And if you were to freeze the food, you're inactivating them even more, which is why you can preserve them even longer. So I'm of the belief, although I haven't seen a clear-cut study to prove this, that you would still have those microbes being present in some capacity. I would suspect that when, because anytime we change our environment, you're going to, some microbes are going to live and some are not. So I would expect that when we freeze our food, that there will be some microbes that perish in the process. But again, let's go back to the ghost or zombie probiotics, which may be present, because those would be perished microbes that could still provide benefit to you.
All right. Annette is wondering if DMN 38 Terra is available in Canada yet.
It is not available in Canada. This is a great question. So we launched, some people may already know this, but we launched in January of 2024. So we're still a very young new company. And we discovered that we couldn't provide the service that we really wanted to. So we said, you know what? Let's not sell into Canada yet. Let's go through the proper channels. And then we will have a Canadian stock with a Canadian label in a Canadian warehouse. There will not be any importation fees. And then we can send it straight from that warehouse to your home. And so we started that process actually in January, and these are country-specific things. So it turns out that Canada has an extremely rigorous process for supplements that's almost on par with pharmaceutical drugs.
Wow.
So we're working through that process, and our hope would be to have Canada opening up sometime in 2025. Again, we've been working on this since January. It just takes way, 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 way longer than anywhere else. On the flip side, I am happy to report for those of you who are in the UK and Europe that we're this is inside intel, but we are actively manufacturing our product for the UK and the EU. And we're going to be coming to you, and we think it's going to be quite soon, like not weeks, but certainly months. And when I say months, less than the number of fingers that I have in my hand.
Ooh, look at that. That's what we call a tease right there. Well done, sir. Question about the Canadian supply. Is it going to have French labeling too? You're going to put the...
That's a great question. We haven't designed the Canadian label because we're just not close enough yet.
Gotcha.
I don't know what the requirements are for that, because they may have requirements. I don't know that I would put the French label unless they require me to be honest with you.
Gotcha. I always get giddy when I go to France. When I go to Canada and literally everything is in English and French. It's like having a free lesson in translation right there. All right,
I grew up in upstate New York, and we would hop, for those of you who know this part of the country, I would hop on Interstate 87, drive directly north through the Adirondack Mountains past Lake George, and enter into Canada and get to Montreal within 2.5 hours of where I grew up. And Montreal is a fascinating place because it feels like you're in Europe, yet you're in North America. It's wild.
Speaking of which, our friend Kevin Owens from WWE was doing some French-Canadian cop show, and I had no idea. You should check that out. I don't know how much French you speak, but it was worth a watch. Global Feel. All right, Karen's watching in Germany. Beth is in Tulsa today. Hello. Sonia's in Massachusetts. And our good buddy Andres, who gets the final question of the day, is sipping coffee in Colombia. You know that's some good coffee right there. He is wondering, in your opinion, what is the best prebiotic? Is it psyllium?
I personally wouldn't choose psyllium, but I'm not opposed to psyllium. I think the psyllium, I don't want to make it sound like I'm against psyllium. I think psyllium can be very helpful to people. So it depends on what your goals are, right? Because I don't think that there's this one prebiotic that's universally the best. I will share with you that in formulating 38 Terra DMN, Daily Microbiome Nutrition, the ingredients were being selected because of their demonstration of benefit to the gut microbiome and in terms of people having regular bowel movements. So that was the motivating factor that I had in making daily microbiome nutrition. And I chose specific ingredients that were tested in human clinical trials, and I provide them at the exact amount that are proven by those studies. Now, psyllium can be of benefit. I will say psyllium is a bit hard for people to take. It doesn't taste very good. It has a weird texture and consistency. But if you were to take psyllium, much like other prebiotics, the way that you approach this is you start off low and you go slow and you gradually increase it. And to me, it depends on what you're trying to accomplish. So it's hard. Again, there's no universally best. But psyllium has a mixture of both prebiotic fermentable fiber that becomes short-chain fatty acids and at the same time, some insoluble fiber. And so the insoluble fiber is grit and it just passes through you. But for many people, that actually helps to facilitate a bowel movement.
There you go. All right, big announcement time. You ready for this? By the way, thank you everybody for your wonderful questions. If we didn't get to yours today, we save them. We try to get to as many as we can still on upcoming episodes as well. So thank you guys for all of those. Now, here is the big announcement, my friend. Drum roll, please. If I could roll my tongue, I would. But my guy coming through. March 7th, Miami, Florida, the Exam Room Live with Dr. B, the Gut Health MD, and me, Chuck Carroll, WLC. We're coming to South Florida, and I cannot wait. Like, I am stoked for this. This is all tied to Dr. Barnard's big bon voyage party, which is right before the holistic holiday at Sea Cruise. So a lot of people are like, when are you going to do the show live out in, you know, the world? And I'm like, hey, we want to do it now. So here's the page right here. If you go to pcrm.org/events, you get all the details. You see our mugs right there, along with Dr. Barnard, the Bon Voyage Bash in Miami, March 7th. So more special guests to be announced. But man, I am stoked for this, Dr. B. Let's do it.
Dude, it's going to be amazing. And not to mention that you think about the date, March 7th, it's kind of the perfect time to be doing it because you get, right, look, Christmas season, you get through Christmas season, you get into the new year. This is where like the changing seasons are fun, but January and February can be a bit tedious. And it's nice to know that what you just got to get through January and February, you get into early March, and then you're going to be rocking in the beautiful weather of Miami. Look at the colors, the blue, the green, the pink. This is what we're going to be doing. We're going to be having fun.
Dude, I'm straight up going Miami Vice. I'm letting you know right now, white suit, pastel, either blue or pink shirt. I don't know if you want to be Crockett or Tubbs. You just let me know. I'll take the other. But man, I'm going to be like just Miami Vice in it to death. Bring those shades that you wore on the show the one time. We're going to have ourselves a party. We're going to have ourselves a party.
Massive shades and Speedo. That's it. That's all I need.
I mean, all right. So we'll end with the story. Speaking of Speedos, true story. I once lost a bet to Goldberg, all right, famous wrestler. I lost a bet to Goldberg where I actually had to go out in January on a corner of a very heavily trafficked road right in Northern Virginia, right outside of DC, with a sign holding it up saying, who's next? And this is me. I was wearing, I was doing a wacky football radio show at the time, and Goldberg was always on. So I lost the bet. So I had to wear Adam Carriker's jersey. He was the player I was doing it with, and Goldberg Speedos, man. You want to talk about cold. Holy mother of pearl. It was snowing that day, bro.
That does not sound like fun, but it does make for a great story. Thank you, Chuck. That's incredible.
True story. True story. Anyway, on that note, hey, Dr. B, enjoy getting that image out of your brain, and I hope that you have a fantastic day.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out with us. Hope you have a great day and have learned a lot about prebiotics and probiotics.
That is my guy right there, Dr. B, the Gut Health MD. And set a reminder, my friends, join us next Wednesday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific for the next episode of The Exam Room Live. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook. You can also stream it on my X profile at Chuck Carroll, WLC. And the replay, of course, you can check that out here on the podcast first thing on Thursday. And Dr. Neil Barnard will be back with us next week. This is your opportunity to ask him anything health-related that might be on your mind. Within reason, of course. Hope to see you then. Now, I want to take a moment to talk about heart disease. because a bombshell revelation dropped at the American Heart Association's annual meeting recently in Chicago. Findings that obesity-related heart disease deaths have nearly tripled over the past two decades. We are talking about a 2.8-fold jump between the years 1999 and 2020. And why is that? Well, a surge in clogged arteries that are caused by ischemic heart disease, which itself is caused by poor diet and lifestyle most of the time. And these are two things that are completely modifiable. These are two things that at this very second we can change. And you don't need any special tools or gym membership to even do it. All you need to do is to eat healthier and move more. So this study, researchers took publicly available health data and they chalked up these more than 226,000 heart disease deaths directly to obesity. They linked them to obesity. And the rate for these deaths, that's up 243% for men and 131% for women. They also say that Black adults, these researchers say that Black adults have the highest death rate here, followed closely by rural residents and people who live in urban environments. And then if you want to delve deeper into the data and analyze specific states, they found that the highest rates are in middle America. States like Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. Those are the states that top the list. And now when you're talking about a number as large as 226,000, researchers say, think about a stadium. Think about the stadium that's close to you. Here in DC, it's Northwest Stadium where the Commanders play. That stadium holds 67,000 fans on game day. Now think about that. Think about filling that stadium to capacity 3.5 times. That's how many people died of obesity-related heart disease. Way too many. Way too many. But again, the power is in our hands. The answer is in our hands. We can prevent this from happening. You can take control this very moment. And one of the best ways to do that, we've made it really easy for you. We have a ton of great resources on our website, including the free plant-based guide for athletes. And no, you don't need to be a professional athlete to reap the benefits. This is simply a plant-based guide for athletes. Even if you just take a walk around the block, guess who's an athlete? You are. So sign up to get your free copy at pcrm.org/athlete, and you will automatically become an Exam Room VIP. This is our insiders club for exam roomies. You'll get the monthly newsletter, tips and thoughts from our experts, some recipes, and a whole lot more. So grab your copy today, the ebook for athletes, pcrm.org/athlete, or click the link in the episode notes. And also, if you feel like you have raised your health IQ by a point or two today, help us out by following or subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever it is that you listen to the Exam Room podcast, and leave a 5-star rating and a nice review. That is how the show continues to grow and we reach more lives around the world. And for today, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to the Pharaoh of Fiber, the Prince of Poop, the King of the Throne, Dr. Will Bulsiewicz, for being here as we continue to raise our health IQs. And for everyone at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, keep it plant-based.